Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
You know it's not Brad, but it is Brad Sesmatt Show, and this is Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports, filling in for my friend Brad, who we're going to check in with in a minute. He's out at the Combine, NFL Combine in Indianapolis. I am out of breath. I just got here from Camelback Ranch. I was out at spring training covering the White Sox. I have never been to that facility before. That is a nice facility. And it struck me when I was standing in that clubhouse, because I've been in this business for so many years, to see a variety of women in there, and it just wasn't a big deal. And I know that sounds probably to many of you who are younger a non-story, but when I began in this business and we went into clubhouses and spring training, it was unbelievably awkward. So that made me feel really good. So I'm feeling empowered today. I'm feeling a little sassy, and we have a great show. As I mentioned, we're going to check in with Brad Sesmatt shortly here. We also have Dennis Dodd, a friend of mine. He works for CBSSports.com. A lot of great football knowledge, and I want to ask him a little bit about ASU and U of A, among other things, even maybe something about Christian Kirk. Interesting storyline going on there. Did you catch what Sean Miller said yesterday after the Wildcats lost that game? He was to Colorado. Fans rush the court in Colorado, which is pretty much the case on the road when the Wildcats lose. They do not lose a lot of games, but when they do, fans rush the court. And Sean Miller pretty much said one of his players is going to end up punching somebody in the face in self-defense. He really hates that idea, so we're going to get into that a little bit too. Also, Greg Cassell, the ESPN executive producer of NFL Matchup, senior producer NFL Films, is going to join Brad, and we're going to talk about, we're going to listen to him and some of his thoughts about the combine and upcoming quarterbacks and things like that. But first, I want to go to my friend who is out in Indianapolis in the Combine. Let's join Brad Sesmatt at the NFL Combine. How you doing, Brad?
Paula, it is good to hear your voice. And we are at the Combine, day number two, where it is quarterback day. Just as you were tossing to me, Connor Cook from Michigan State walked one way, and Christian Hackenberg from Penn State walked the other as they go back and forth in the media sessions here today. It's just on the other side of me, I'd say 50 yards from where I'm sitting right now, are lots of quarterbacks. Rob Gronkowski's little brother was in the media center earlier today, and I guess it's a sign of the time, Paula. Nobody really asked him a football question, what he was doing here. They all wanted to know, of course, was he on Gronk's cruise? Of course they did.
Of course they did.
Of course they did. And there was more media there for Gronk's brother than there was for Ted Thompson of the Green Bay Packers talking about the Packers. That's, you know, entirely possible. So you just never know at the Combine. It's one guest after another, and it's a great time here. But the Cardinals, boy, yesterday was really interesting into last night about some of the comments that Bruce Arians had to make, and also Steve Keim, too. You and I talked yesterday a little bit about the quarterback situation. Here's Bruce Arians. He was asked directly, is the organization, are the Arizona Cardinals starting to think about a replacement down the road for Carson Palmer?
We already have. We've talked about it a bunch. And whether or not we act on it, we'll see. It looks like, from what I've seen so far, this is a good class.
So how deep class? That's the question that I would have to ask, is how deep would this class be for the Cardinals to go out and find a quarterback, Paula? And you look at Drew Stanton on the roster, of course, and Matt Barkley came in so late last season. Steve Keim told me yesterday that they didn't get to see him at all in training camp, so he's kind of playing catch up. But first real acknowledgement, I think, by the organization that, yeah, we know we got to find the guy, and are they going to draft a quarterback here this year here in Indianapolis?
And I think Drew Stanton is a terrific backup, and I know a lot of people are big fans of him and that he's been able to step in, but I don't think he's your starting quarterback, and I think that that's a real question that they have to ask. I think they love Stanton as a backup, but they've got to decide if it's going to be somebody they're going to draft or if they're going to go possibly with a free agent kind of move.
Well, and here's the thing. This isn't throwing dirt on Carson Palmer.
Of course not.
A year ago, let's bury Fitz, right? And so, but Bruce Arians did talk at great length yesterday about what he's seeing now out of Carson Palmer, having to go through the adversity. It sounds like that Carson Palmer has turned the page.
Yeah, just the experience, you know, having failed. Last year, the knee was the driving force. This year, He's already working like crazy because of the way it ended. And that's what you want. You want your guys back. And when he's back working like that, the rest of them will be back working like that. And as a coach, you don't have to say anything, you know. Let's just get going again and see if we can reach that pinnacle again and play better.
So Steve Keim said to me that he did have dinner with Carson this last week and liked the place that he was in. And, you know, Paul, it's that he's 36. You start looking around and saying who the replacement is. I don't think Carson Palmer should take this personal, though.
No, he shouldn't. And, you know, I was just thinking about what you were saying, the place that Carson is in. And I remember I was out at that Carolina Panthers game, and the look on his face afterward and sort of watching him leave the stadium, that was a despondent guy. And understandably, because of the expectations going into the season. But it's good to hear they had dinner, and it sounds like he's kind of moved on. Obviously, he's a veteran. He'll be prepared and everything else. But you're right. It's not something he should take personally, and I'm sure he'd be supportive of them having somebody ready for down the road.
Okay, and here's the one last bit from Bruce Arians, and this is interesting because – drafting a quarterback, when you hear the philosophy of Bruce Arians, especially early on in this conversation, certainly sounds like that they're looking right now, but he would like to get a guy in here that could play right away. And you can't really do that having Carson Palmer on the roster. Listen to this.
The only way to learn is play. I'm not a guy that, now I say that, we might draft one, he's going to hold a clipboard for a year. But I don't believe in holding clipboards. You learn from practice. You have to get every snap. The trick with a young guy, especially if you're going to sit him for a year, is getting him enough practice work to where he's improving in your offense, not somebody else's offense. So when they're sitting there and not playing, it's very hard to develop them. Now, you may take a rough year, and today you don't get a year on your contract as a coach. You're going to get your ass fired, you know, trying to get this kid developed. But that's a really fine line of taking one and playing him or taking one and sitting him. In our situation, he'd sit for a year and hopefully be the future.
Okay, so they give themselves a window there. He'd have to sit for a year, and then you'd hope that he'd play, which tells me that, yeah, these conversations are more than just idle conversation at the NFL scouting combine, where every year an organization is asked, are you going to take a quarterback this year or not? That there's actually a little bit of speed and substance here to this conversation. So that was interesting yesterday. Bruce was asked about the Peyton Manning story with Tennessee. And I don't know if you saw it. I'm sure you did. I thought that he had so many things thrown at him that the way he answered it, it was deep into the conversation, Paula, that it was just kind of caught him off guard when he was asked about it and his view of the whole case rather than Peyton's legacy being here in Indianapolis. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, and it's a great question and it's a great point, Brad, about him. And I'm sure a lot was thrown at him. I had a little bit of problem. I thought he could have been a little bit more sensitive in the answer. And this is coming from someone who respects Bruce Arians a great deal. He has been nothing but generous with his time, the way he treats female journalists equally to male journalists. My goodness, this is a team that brought on the first assistant a coach from the NFL that was female. So I have no question about who Bruce Arians is as a person. But this is an issue as old as it is, as many questions as people have about it. There is the allegation of domestic abuse, of sexual abuse. Just in that alone, I think maybe Arians should have couched his answer a little bit. I know he's sticking up for his guys. That's what Bruce Arians does best. I respect him for it. But that was just my gut reaction. I think in all of these areas, I don't care if it's a 20-year-old case, you have to exhibit a little bit of sensitivity because there could be validity to it.
A fair point. You know, I think in we transition lightly from that to wrap it up. The other elements out here, really no surprise that Steve Keim questioned Andre Ellington and his durability. That's been buzzing around for the last couple of months. I'd be surprised if Andre Ellington were back here myself. Nothing against him. It's just if you want a dollar figure and you can't stay healthy and stay on the field, perhaps all the hits have come out of him. Speaking of running backs, we spent some time with Paul Perkins from Chandler High School in UCLA. He met with the media. DJ Foster, here's a little bit of DJ Foster. This was from a short time ago with us here at the Combine in Indianapolis. So there's DJ. And, you know, you go through all the players, and today is quarterback day here. They're going to roll throughout the day. And now that the Cardinals have been open about, yeah, we've got to start looking for the guy, we'll take a closer look at that. Greg Cosell from ESPN and the executive producer of NFL Matchup. He breaks down quarterbacks on tape. He'll join us here in a few minutes from the Combine. Paula, we'll send it back to you.
Sounds great, Brad. We look forward to it. And I always love the breakdowns of the quarterback, because whether it's a great class or not, that's the thing that interests me most coming out of these combines. And you always got to wonder if maybe the Cardinals are going to look into something like that. All right, we will be back here shortly. We are going to talk with Dennis Dodd, one of my favorite people. He works for CBSSports.com. This is Paula Bovin filling in for Brad Sesmat here on Sports 360 AZ. Welcome back to the show. It is never a bad time to talk college football. And when I want to do that, I go to my friend who works for CBSSports.com and is also the best guy to have in a press conference if you want to ask a tough question. Dennis Dodd, how are you?
Paula, I am good. You flatter me. That's amazing. Thank you.
I just remember a Final Four. You were asking some tough questions. It was great. So, let's talk.
If they're not going to make those guys available to us for one-on-ones, you got to ask them there.
Yeah, no kidding. You got to get them in. All right, I do want to talk some college football, though. So much interest here in Arizona State. It was obviously a disappointing season. Mike Norvell is off to Memphis. Several key assistants are gone. I'm curious what the national view, Dennis, is of ASU now. Todd Graham had three pretty strong seasons. They struggled last year. Now all these coaching changes. What are people saying about ASU?
Not much talk about Arizona or Arizona State. I mean, it's, USC won the division. They made a coaching change. I don't know where that leaves them now. But I think there was a lot of talk with Todd when he came in. Obviously, there was some great offensive football there and some very good quarterbacks, but not much lately. The first thing I think of Arizona State these days is the renovation, because I've seen it, and it's vast, and it's huge, and, you would hope it pays off.
Yeah, I think that's what they're hoping, too, that there's going to be some changes with fan support and things like that. I was curious your thoughts, and you mentioned Mike Norvell. Paxton Lynch, no longer quarterback at Memphis. I don't know what you thought about him, but I'm wondering what you think. Is Norvell well prepared for what they have at Memphis, or are they getting a big blow by his loss of
Lynch?
Yeah,
I really like Mike. I think he's going to do well. But, yeah, when you lose an NFL-ready quarterback like Paxton Lynch, that's going to be a huge blow, and in what is frankly the most competitive group of five conference there is right now by a large margin. The American is, I think, way ahead of the Mountain West right now. We saw that with Houston going to the Peach Bowl, going 13-1. But I think what Justin Fuente left behind is now an expectation. It's, the program can win. They can attract players. There's money flowing into the program. So I like Mike Norvell. This is a great move for him. This is not a starter job. This is, he's going to have to win. This is not like going and taking a Sun Belt job and hoping it works out. This is very good for him. It's a near the top program in the American, which in theory has a chance to go to a major bowl every year.
You mentioned there's not a lot of discussion about ASU or Arizona. I'm curious over the years, Dennis, how much you've dealt with Rich Rodriguez. If you think he can turn things around down in Tucson, obviously he's made some great strides already, but they had some big changes too. I think most of their major defensive coaches are gone. They brought in Marcel Yates from Boise State to run the defense. Yeah. Scooby Wright's off to the NFL. What do you think of the program down there? What do you think of Rich Rodriguez?
Yeah, again, there was a lot of buzz early, and then they kind of settled into a 500 type of look. Obviously, things didn't go as well as they wanted the last couple of years. But I think Rich Rod is Rich Rod. He's always going to be looking around. We saw what happened with South Carolina. I think Greg Byrne understands that's just going to be the price to pay with Rich Rodriguez. You hear rumblings about him wanting to get back east. It didn't work out at South Carolina, but, and he is still, I'm sitting here writing a story on another national scoring record being set in 2015, fifth time since 2000. You've got to mention Rich Rodriguez in that story as one of the godfathers with the modern spread offense along with Urban Meyer. But that only goes so far. You have to start winning sooner or later at the only place that, obviously we talk about it all the time, that hasn't been in the Rose Bowl.
No question. I mean, it's the key thing when you play in the Pac-12. That's what everyone is seeking. You mentioned. Tell me a little bit more about the story you're writing and the scoring, Dennis. What's sort of changing? What are the angles you're seeing there?
Well, I haven't posted it yet, so I don't want to scoop myself. But I always look at this. I always look at this every year, and what I found out over the years is what the NCAA posts on their website isn't always accurate. Kind of have to wait until the records book comes out in August to see what the numbers are. But I talked to one of their statisticians, and he went over the numbers for me, and it is a new record, the largest 1 year gain in scoring since 2001, 29.65 points average per team. So it's 30 points. You know, the average game features 30 points by either team. And I went a little further. I had the idea to, you know, how many, about what percentage of games end with at least one team scoring 30 points? And a year ago, that number was almost 73%, almost three quarters of the games played. Now it's dropped off a little bit, but I think it shows where we're heading when Nick Saban's name is attached to the two biggest opponent yardage gains in a game in Alabama history.
Wow.
It was a Johnny Manziel game at Texas A&M, and I think it was a kick six game. And then he wins the highest scoring championship game ever. So that it's infected, I guess, if you will, everyone.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I didn't know the numbers were quite that big. One guy who, at least out here we know, has been able to score some points is Christian Kirk, the wide receiver out at Texas A&M. I know there's a lot of buzz here in town. Do you think he's a dark horse candidate in 2016 for the Heisman, or is that just too early to even guess?
I think it's a good way to put it, dark horse. Look, I always tell people, in February, I am a Heisman candidate. You know,
like, this is true. Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. My campaign starts today. I think if dark horse is right, I mean, going in, it's going to be Christian McCaffrey and the quarterback at Clemson. Those are going to be the top two in any order. To get past either one of those is going to be tough. But who was talking about Christian McCaffrey? Who was talking about Christian Kirk, for that matter, at this time last year? He had a freshman All-American season. He's kind of a Swiss Army knife for Texas A&M. They've got to get their quarterback situation shored up. And that's a huge, huge deal before we even talk about Christian Kirk. That's a program in upheaval. But, yeah, I think he's a dark horse right now.
You had some really good stuff talking to Kyle Allen, who is now at Houston. He had some interesting things to say about the culture in College Station. How concerning you think that should be for fans there? And is Kevin Sumlin lost the program in any way? Or are there legitimate concerns, you think, for fans?
I think until Kevin Sumlin or someone at A&M tries to shape a narrative, I think it's on them. You know, they're responsible for whatever image is being projected. And Kyle Allen was the first one involved in all that to talk, and those were his views, that there is a culture, quote-unquote, left over from the Johnny Manziel era. I find it interesting that he got to school 3 years after Johnny left. So, again, take that with a grain of salt, and it did cause a big stir. But, you know, we gave Kevin Sumlin a chance to comment. I mean, I think at some point he has to. He will, I guess, when they kick off spring practice, but you know, there's a lot going on there. They lost their offensive coordinator, Tex Babatol, who went to Cal. They had problems at quarterback last year, but he's well thought of at age 29 and Sonny Dykes, you know, offense out there. And I think it says volumes that had either one of those guys stayed, Kyler Murray or Kyle Allen, they would have been guaranteed to be a starting quarterback in the SEC.
Absolutely.
So what does that tell you about how bad things are there behind the scenes? So, yeah, there's issues.
What was the biggest thing that Allen brought up? I mean, what was bothering him most about what was going on there?
That basically everybody wasn't pulling on the same rope in the same direction. Guys weren't working hard enough. I guess it's up to me. I should have gotten into specifics, but I just asked the question at that point and just let him go. It's like, I can't believe he's saying this. Because the SID was sitting there, it was in his office, and he just went off. And I think it's great. I think having met Kyle for the first time. He's a great kid, and didn't know till late that he was Mike Allen's son, the old Fiesta Bowl president, which is fantastic. So it was more periphery stuff. You know, we know that they both started games last year. Kyle Allen was there 2 years. Kyler Murray, who's more is a baseball prospect too, won 1 year. You know, and then he ends up at Oklahoma. So you know, we shall see.
Great stuff, Dennis. You can find him on CBSSports.com. He is the ultimate insider when it comes to college football. Dennis, thanks for joining us.
All right, Paula, thank you.
That was Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com. We are going to keep the theme college, but I want to get into what Sean Miller said last night after the Arizona Wildcats lost to Colorado. You are listening to the Brad Sesmatch Show. I'm Paula Bovin filling in here on Sports 360 AZ.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports 360 AZ.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Paula Bovin. I am filling in. I didn't say my name right. That's funny. Paula Bovin. Okay, it's been a long morning. I am filling in for Brad Sesmatch, who is out in Indianapolis for the NFL Combine. One of the stories that really caught my attention last night was, you know, I love my Pac-12 hoops. I was watching the Arizona game against Colorado and later caught some sound bites of Sean Miller really, really frustrated about what went on with fans storming the court. Because if you play for the Wildcats and you're on the road and you lose, fans pretty much storm the court. I have been amazed how frequently that happens. And it happened again last night. I know there's real concerns about Sean Miller about what's going to happen one day, you know, one of his players is going to get mad. He's, you know, and there's a history, obviously, with Sean Miller in the Pac-12. He's had frustration with officiating. Frankly, the guy I think has been the voice for many of us with the officiating issue and has been willing to talk about it and step up. And I think there's a bit of a strained relationship there with the U of A and the Pac-12. I'm reading between the lines, but I kind of get that sense. So I want you to listen here in a minute what Sean Miller said, and then I'm going to also pick Eric Sorensen's brain here in a second. But let's listen to the soundbite from Sean Miller.
But eventually what's going to happen in the Pac-12 is this. An Arizona player is going to punch a fan. And they're going to punch the fan out of self-defense. And when it happens, only when it happens, will everybody take a deep breath and say, we have to do something to protect both teams so that when the game ends, that we have a deep breath to be able to leave the court or at least shake the other team's hand and then get to our locker room. And then if the court wants to be stormed, fine. But if until then that happens, it's fallen on deaf ears because there's only one team right now that the court stormed on.
I love Sean Miller because he is so honest about this. And I've really, really struggled with this issue because part of the awesomeness of college sports is that fandom, that there is still this sort of innocence about college sports. Your team beats a team that's really good and you storm the court and it's exciting and everything else. But I've come to the conclusion, and Eric, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, but I've come to the conclusion if Miller is worried enough about the safety of his players, then it's a real deal. And I'm not, you know, I sit courtside sometimes, but I'm never on the court. And these players are clearly concerned about what might happen to them. So I agree. I think the Pac-12 needs to step in and do something. You know, maybe, again, it's like Miller said, let these guys get off the court for, you know, and then let the fans come on and celebrate. Although I know the novelty kind of wears off by then, but maybe it's the answer. I'm sure you're a big rah-rah college guy, Eric. I'm guessing you've probably stormed the court once or twice in your life.
I have. When I was in college, I did storm the court once. The best part for me with Sean Miller is, number one, he's brutally honest.
Right.
And number two, everything he says with not only a meaning in the present, but a meaning in the future.
Right.
Like, it's never, like, he's, it's almost like he's coaching in the media session. He's setting up something for the future. And what he said last night, number one, he's right.
Right.
Number two, Why is Colorado storming the court? They're 20-9.
I agree.
They're 20-9. They're an established basketball program. I went to TCU. They have two wins in the Big 12. If they beat Kansas or if they beat Iowa State and those kids, all 11 that go to the basketball games at TCU, they want to storm the court, go for it.
Right.
But why is Colorado storming the court? It's not like they've never beaten U of A before.
That was bizarre to me, and that was one of my first reactions after the game. It's like, what are you guys doing? I mean, you're an accomplished team this season. You've surprised a lot of the conference. So that was bizarre to me, too. And there's been some things that have happened already this season. There was a sports reporter who got trampled when there was a court storming. I cannot remember the school now, but he had to go in the hospital right after the game. So it's clearly a dangerous thing, and I do. I really understand the concern of fans that you're taking away sort of this great, I don't know, part of just the college game. But
but it's really not that great. Because honestly, when you storm the court, right. Paula, you get down on the court. You're down on the court for about 15 to 20 seconds of insanity.
Right.
And then it's just a bunch of people on a basketball court.
Right.
Some people say, oh, yeah, I remember when we stormed the court. But it's such a short-lived situation.
Right.
And like Sean Miller said, the game had just ended. They lost they had a chance to tie the game. Emotions are at an all-time high. You're dealing with a bunch of very competitive 18 to 21-year-old college athletes,
right.
And a coaching staff that is just coming off a bad loss. It is a recipe for not only disaster, but for danger. I almost like, and I know coaches won't like this, but when you get the players that go on top, like the game ends, and sometimes you see the players beat the fans to the punch, so to speak,
right.
And they'll go up on the scores table,
right.
And sort of just motion to the students who are still in the student section, that at least gives the opportunity for the opposing team to get off the floor or most of the way off
right.
the floor. And then if you want to storm the court, that's fine.
Right.
But it happens so fast. You've got hundreds of students, and you only have two or three officials and a handful of security guards. They're never going to stop it. And last night, they couldn't.
No, they couldn't. But they can. They could find ways to sort of beef everything up and get it done. I think what people forget sometimes, too, with these games, you mentioned the emotion of the games. There is so much sort of physicality going on and contact, and the emotions of these guys are running high. I could see someone like running into can you imagine like Caleb Tarzewski,
oh,
7-footer,
yeah.
Decking some guy? You
right.
know, he could cause some serious injuries.
Like
so
Rondae Hollis-Jefferson last year.
Right.
I mean, that guy, that's not the person you want to run into.
No.
But getting back to, I'm sure you remember back maybe 10, 15 years ago in college football, when fans used to storm the field,
sure.
They climbed on the goalposts,
right?
Like
of
ASU,
course.
Nebraska.
ASU. Yeah,
and then the NCAA and all these schools got smart and said, you know what? That's fine. If you're going to storm the field, we're going to have collapsible goalposts.
Right.
And you're not going to be able to climb up on the goalpost. You're not going to be able to take the goalpost down Mill Avenue like ASU students did after the Nebraska game back in the 90s.
About that. That's right.
I mean,
yeah.
Back then, I mean, it was.
Yeah.
But it only takes a couple bad situations for it to really get out of hand. And like you said, a media member was hurt.
Right.
And you can't blame the students because
no.
They're just kind of living in the moment. But you'd hope they'd find some sort of happy median that make everyone happy.
Maybe you should put like those invisible fences, you know, like they have for dogs.
People would that work?
Get out of the court. Yeah, they'd like zap
yeah,
them or
exactly,
something.
Yeah.
People would be going down left
well,
and
if
right.
You've been drinking all day and you're in the student section, you'd run right through that and not even
in
worry.
A heartbeat.
And then tell all your friends you got tased when you really didn't get tased.
Right, right. Yeah, I like that. And I like, you know what, if someone's going to speak up, Miller is a guy that can do it. One, as you mentioned, Eric, he's honest. But he's also one of the strong voices of the conference. You know, he is great for this conference. He recruits the best players. They win a lot of games. No one in the conference gives the Pac-12 more publicity than Sean Miller. They need to listen to his voice because clearly he's making a great point. And I know there is that strained relationship with the conference, but I think they need to address
it. And what he said about we're the only school in the conference that gets court stormed. He's right. I mean, he's right. Like if ASU beats Oregon, you're not going to see the ASU students flood out on the court.
Right.
But last year, when they beat U of A, what happened? They stormed the court.
Yeah.
So,
and we've seen it happen. I know at Duke, when Duke is on the road, if they lose, which hasn't, for a long time hasn't happened, you see that happen quite a bit too. But, you know, the last thing that this league needs right now is to be the one where some fan seriously gets hurt because a Pac-12 player decked him, which, as Sean Miller said, that's probably going to happen. I think the league needs to step up and address this soon. I've been surprised because it's been brought up, and Larry Scott has only said we're going to look into it, but I thought there had been a stronger response in the past. I think Sean Miller was using last night as a pulpit. Good for him. You know, listen, and maybe they'll get something done.
And it also goes back to the can of worms that is the Pac-12 officiating.
Right.
I mean, from basketball to football, every week something happens in a Pac-12 football or basketball game, and there's so much national buzz about a call that was made, a call that wasn't made. I don't know if you could. Did you catch any of the Washington-Oregon State game last night?
No.
Oregon State hit a game winner at the buzzer, a three-pointer. They won by a point. Guy traveled.
Wow.
And all the post-game buzz was divvied out between, wow, that was a great shot that this freshman guard made for Oregon State. The other half was, how did the Pac-12 refs miss a blatant traveling call on the last play of the game?
You know, there was a key play last night in that Arizona game where Arizona lost possession or was supposed to get possession. I think they said maybe the ball went off of Gabe York. I don't remember specifically. But it was right at the end of the game when Arizona has staged a comeback. And you're just kind of throwing your arms up in the air of, here we go again with officiating. And I know people like to say this happens everywhere. Every conference hates their officials. I am telling you, when coaches have come to this conference, because I've talked to them off the record, they say it is worse here. And I know the conference has stepped up to fix the officiating issue, but it's still a problem. All right, we are going to continue with the show. We're going to take a break right now, though. Greg Cassell, ESPN executive producer of NFL Matchup, the senior producer of NFL Films, is going to join Brad Sesmat, who, again, is at the NFL Combine in Indianapolis, to talk about this year's quarterback draft class. So make sure stay tuned here on the Brad Sesmat Show, streaming live on sports360az.com and azcentralsports.com. That's my place.
Greg Cosell swings on in here at the NFL Combine, one of the big names around the world of NFL films, the executive producer of the NFL Matchup, senior producer, the film guy. Is that the best way to put it for you, because you break it down from so many different angles?
You know, I just go into the office and hope I can get into my computer and I start watching tape. That's the way it works.
What does the tape show you about the top of this year's draft, Greg?
Well, I've just, Brad, really gotten started. So it's, you know, I've done a bunch of quarterbacks. I've looked at probably 90% of the wide receivers who are at the combine here, selected other players. You know, when it comes to the quarterbacks, I probably feel that Carson Wentz is the most physically gifted quarterback in this draft. I think you'll deal with a situation with a lot of scouts and coaches who look at the smaller school, lower level of competition. That can be a factor for some people. I'm much more of a traits, attributes guy, and I think his overall traits are probably the best in this quarterback class.
We were talking with Bruce Arians earlier, and, of course, you have Tom Moore in Arizona.
Yeah.
We have some great, great students of the game and coaches.
Absolutely.
And teachers, and Bruce is adamant about.
So you're slumming with me then? If you
listen to you,
Tom Moore.
Listen to you. You know, in Bruce's case, he talks about how today's player, doesn't matter what position, just doesn't have the fundamentals.
Right, that's a great point.
And that when you're taking a quarterback, and Steve Keim was telling me this as well, that you take a quarterback, you stay awake at night because we got to find a replacement for Carson eventually.
Right, right.
And I could lose my job if I don't find the right guy. That's how it works being a general manager. So I'm leading over towards, give me some names of quarterbacks that are not going to be there at the top of the board where the Cardinals are picking. But as you look at this draft, that, you know, Brad, a third, fourth, fifth round guy may be there that's of interest to the system that they run in Arizona to groom and develop.
Well, I'll give you a name I really like in one sec, but I find it fascinating what Bruce said, because I think that repetitive mechanics have become somewhat of a lost art.
Mm.
Now, it's not for Bruce, because I know Bruce and I know the way he sees the position. But I think for a lot of people, the idea of repetitive mechanics has fallen by the wayside, and I think that's so critical. I mean, that's one of the things that makes Carson Palmer what he is so repetitive with his mechanics and does things the same way on every play. And I think people don't realize how critically important that is. But if you go to, let's say, quarterback who could be there, later in round two, round three. I think much will depend on how he goes through this entire process because he's very talented. It's Jacoby Brissett from North Carolina State, who's 6'4 plus, 235 pounds, big arm, can move well. At times, looks like Ben Roethlisberger. There's questions you'll have with him that Bruce will have because the field vision element, I think, with Jacoby Brissett, sometimes I feel like I see it, other times I don't. So that's something that Bruce and staff will probably look at really hard.
Playing with his eyes.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Playing quickly with your eyes.
Playing quickly, yeah.
And there's a balance. Playing quickly, but not too fast. You know, it's
sure.
It reminds me of the old John Wooden phrase, be quick, but don't hurry.
Right.
You know, and that's easy to say, but there's a real balance to that, and that's difficult. So, but Jacoby Brissett is someone that I feel people will like and people will feel like he could be a quality starting quarterback in the NFL down the road.
What did the tape show you of Carson Palmer at the end of the year?
You know, I really struggled with that because Carson was so good throughout the year, and he's always been one of my favorite quarterbacks to watch because of the way he plays the position. I'm sort of a purist, and I think he plays the position the way it needs to be played at the NFL level to succeed on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing about Carson, I think he's always been willing to pull the trigger. I think that he's very much what we call a read-it-out quarterback, which means he reads it and throws it, and there are times when he doesn't read it right. Now, as a veteran, those are few and far between, but there are times he doesn't. And I think he started playing a little fast late in the season. He was just not as comfortable. And I can't – only he could tell you why. I can't tell you why. Mm-hmm. That's what I saw. And I think he's robotic and mechanical in a good way, but I think you can also cross the line and be robotic and mechanical in the sense that the defense knows where he's going to throw the ball at times.
So when Bruce says we have to start finding that replacement for Carson Palmer, you see it.
Well, he's 36 years old.
Sure, but Drew Stanton, Matt Barkley, I don't see where the answer is on the roster right now.
It won't be one of those two players.
Yeah, yeah. Who are you most looking forward to seeing while you're here at the Combine in terms of players? Who's the one that really has you curious?
Well, I'm a quarterback guy, so I'm always anxious to see quarterbacks. I'm very anxious to see Jared Goff. I've had the luxury because I was out at Nike last summer at the Elite 11, so I've seen Carson Wentz throw live. I'm very anxious to see Jared Goff throw live.
I appreciate you coming by for a couple of minutes. I know you're busy. Thanks.
Brad, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Greg Cosell with us there, executive producer, NFL Matchup, senior producer, NFL Films. Paula, we'll toss it back to you in the studio.
Great stuff from Brad and Greg Cosell. And Brad's been great. All the information he's offered from the NFL Combine. He will be back tomorrow on this show and I'm sure has some more storylines of players and coaches. I am Paula Bovin filling in for Brad Sesmat today. And what a great show. I really want to appreciate Dennis Dodd for coming on CBSSports.com. Greg Cosell and his time he spent with Brad. And it has been quite the show here on the Brad Sesmat Show, live streaming, of course, sports360az.com, azcentralsports.com. Brad, again, will be back tomorrow from the Combine in Indianapolis, where he'll have more stories about the NFL. I'm Paula Bovin. Thanks for joining us.